Okay. We can talk openly now.
Smart move, Millie.
Yes, a wise precaution, madam.
Well, I am a doctor, Tanner.
Why, indeed you are. Speaking of which, I must ask, is there something wrong with the fellow? In spite of his harrowing misadventures today, there seems to be an odd quality about the man, although I cannot clearly tell what it is that troubles me so. Most perplexing. Is he ill, by any chance?
Eunuch.
Indeed. So, this Tregart is another one of those kinds of barons, eh? Neutering young boys to create guards, overly protective of her. By God, that is a foul practice. I had hoped we would never see it again after that mad woman at Castle Rock.
Just another reason to chill the bitch.
And if she is indeed the only person who knows the secret of building a plane that could fly, then...
No, damn it, Doc. Chilling her won't end the matter. Remember Silas?
The faces of the other companions showed that they recalled the incident clearly. After the insane whitecoat had been dealt with, his assistant had taken over and proved to be an even tougher adversary, more vicious and more aggressive. It was a hard fact for the Deathlands warriors to accept, but sometimes killing folks only made a problem worse.
So putting Tregart into the ground is just half the job. We also have to make sure that all of her records are destroyed so that nobody else can build more planes.
This world is just not ready for air travel yet. I mean, if we were to reintroduce running water to the Vills, you can be sure some baron would only use it to drown people in public executions.
Got that in the crosshairs. Any more coffee?
Sure. No more cream, though.
It's okay.
Taking out Tregart and burning down her workshops. Sounds like night creep work.
I'm afraid so, lover.
I don't like being an assassin. There's no other choice. We've seen what one angel can do. Now think of a dozen. 100.
It would put us right back into the Stone Age, maybe for good. And what passes for civilization these days is already hanging on by its fingernails.
If what Carl said on the ride out here is true, then Tregart has herself a private fortress tucked inside an old blast crater. No way we're busting in to level a place.
What about hot air balloons? We could drift in over the wall and drop down inside.
Huh. Rubbing the scar on his face, Ryan gave that some thought. They had used hot air balloons to escape from Vills before, but never to get into one. And balloons were easy to build, just cloth and rope and wicker for the basket. Unfortunately, they flew at the mercy of the wind. Against that biplane, a balloon would be a sitting duck.
Too slow. We'd only get chilled trying.
Use rockets to blow down gate.
None in the place, Jack. And by the time we made enough to do the job, she'd have another warbird flying. Maybe 3 or 4.
She won enough.
Can't we make rockets? We know the formula for gunpowder, along with several other explosive compounds.
Yeah, Millie, but that would take weeks to make. If we could find all the ingredients. Gun cotton is easy to make. There are plenty of sheets back home. But the cooking would take months, even if we got enough sunshine.
To make nitric acid?
Right.
Not enough fuel for Molotovs. Not for a whole veal.
Madam, would it be possible for us to make a plane? Perhaps to engage the Lady Tregart in aerial combat?
Oh, don't be foolish, Doc. That would take years, if ever. We don't have the right kind of wood or cloth or... Now, the motor is no problem. Plenty of those we could use at the...
Mildred glanced over at where Carl snored peacefully.
The place. But we'd have to hand-carve the propeller, and that would be nigh impossible.
Take it off a boat?
Wrong pitch. And too small.
And the one at the crash site in the desert was burned in, too.
Damnation. We are all quite well equipped with pre-dark technology and weapons, and still we are stymied. What chance does anybody else have against this baron of the air?
An air baron. Like in the German Luftwaffe. Not bad, old-timer. Tregart and Hitler would have gotten along just fine.
Who, Mildred?
Mildred bit a lip, trying to translate the entire rise and fall of the Third Reich to people who barely understood the concept of politics or nations.
The Lord Ka of my time, Ryan.
You ace him?
Damn straight we did. And we'll also send this lunatic into the ground.
Pity we don't have any of that nerve gas. There aren't supposed to be any civvies at the airfield, so we could simply roll in a canister and watch them drop.
God. Where are the ethics in this hellhole?
Indeed, Ms. Roth, your loquacious observation is most astute. We would need an army to accomplish the task.
An army?
Ryan picked up his head at that. Now there was a razor idea.
How about crossbows? Those will reach the biplane when it's diving in for the kill. We can make them from the spring leaves of the civilian cars.
If they hit the warbird, only make a hole in the cloth.
Not if the arrow was on fire, Jack. Shine fire would go out, but this grease from the garage level of the home should do the trick.
Fire arrows. Yeah, they might do the trick.
How long does it take to make crossbows?
Dunno. Maybe a couple of days. But we'd need the resources at the other place. And that means getting over the Ojai, which we don't know how to do, and then getting back over it again.
We do not have such a convenience, John Barrymore. Tregart will have more planes flying soon, and then it shall be all over. She will spread her air war across the Deathlands like a plague, smashing apart dams and bridges and walls, looting the world for her will to survive.
Worse, chill our friends. Not gonna let that happen.
Indeed, we shall not. My Emily would not like for us to do that.
We could jack the crossbows from her Vilsec men. No, that won't work. At the first sign of trouble, Tregart would come flying out shooting.
Yeah, she probably would do just that.
You've been awful quiet, lover. Everything okay?
Been working on a battle plan.
Ryan pulled out his panga and started to draw in the dirt.
Now, tell me if you think I've gone crazy, or if this blaster is packing a full mag.
Sandra Tregart shot upright in bed, the soft blankets falling away from her bare breasts. Brian rose from a chair across the tent.
My lady?
It took a few moments for the fog of sleep to leave her mind before Sandra realized that this was her tent on the airfield. So, she had managed to survive the landing after all.
Excellent.
The cool evening air felt good on her bare skin, so she made no effort to cover herself. On the other side of the tent, Brian shifted uneasily in his chair and tried not to stare at the naked woman. In the bluish light of the shine lanterns, she seemed like a dream, beautiful beyond words.
Is the angel a...
Going to a table heavily laden with food, Brian filled a wooden cup with water and rushed forward.
Thank you.
She grasped it in both hands. She shoved the cup at him for more. He went back to refill the container and returned, also carrying the water bottle and a plate of smoked meats. Sandra emptied the cup again, a little excess running out of the corner of her mouth to dribble onto her breasts. Brian turned his head away as he held out the plate of food.
How's my plane?
Completely repaired and ready for flight, my lady.
Swinging her legs to the side of the bed, Sandra let the sheets slide to the floor, and for the first time noticed that her wound had been expertly wrapped, the bloody bandages still smelling faintly of shine.
And where's Carter?
She stiffly raised a knee to wiggle her toes. Under the bandages, her thigh throbbed gently, but everything else worked.
Guarding the angel. But more importantly, how are you, Baron?
Brushing back her explosion of hair, Sandra felt a faint stirring between her legs as she studied the wide shoulders of the youthful Sekman. Young, healthy, and strong, with a thick beard just starting to grow, Brian wasn't one of her eunuchs. Not yet, anyway, and Sandra began to wonder about the necessity of the mutilation. Her father had taken several wives before her mother yielded an heir, and her brother used to bed every willing girl he could find. So why should she be celibate and suffer? Why not take a lover? And when he was no longer amusing or useful, he would join the ranks of her eunuchs, with at least a memory of what it meant to be a real man. Plus, he was young and inexperienced. As his first and last bed partner, she could control the boy like a mule in harness. Sex, pain, jolt, fear. She had to always have a handle of control for those near to her. Any other way meant betrayal and death. Like Carl.
Baron?
Resting a hand on his arm, Sandra eased herself to the rocky floor. The ground was chilly to her bare feet, and her skin became covered with goose flesh, both nipples instantly hardening.
I'm fine.
Sandra patted his arm before letting go. His face burned red at the friendly contact, and she experimentally arched her back, as if stretching. The action thrust out her breasts, and she caught Brian, glancing at them briefly. His glance moved to her legs, and Sandra felt a rush of dampness at the frank look of approval from the strapping young man. But then his face darkened into a scowl.
My lady, you're bleeding again.
Brian knelt to touch her bandage. Looking down, Sandra scowled at the sight of a crimson stain spreading across the white strips of cloth covering her thigh.
Whoever stitched the wound shut will be whipped. This kind of incompetence is not to be tolerated.
But we did not close the wound, my lady.
And why not?
That was my decision, my lady.
Carter emerged from the opening of the tent. The sec chief walked in, carrying an old porcelain bowl filled with steaming towels and a small wooden box.
I thought you needed the rest and decided to wait until you awoke, naturally.
Sandra's fleeting moment of randiness quickly faded away.
Very smart, Carter.
She sat back on the edge of the bed.
As usual, you did the correct thing. Damn, it's cold. Brian, fetch me some clothing and get a brazier in here to warm this place.
Yes, Baron.
Carter, start working.
As you can see, Lady Treggert, I did not alter the child as you asked.
Carter placed the bowl on a chair. The box went on the floor, and extracting a key from his clothing, the sec chief carefully unlocked the lid.
It is well that you didn't. Make sure he isn't bothered by any of the others until I say so. His role in the vill will be different from that of yours.
Whatever you command.
Opening the wooden box, the sec chief started removing pale blue lengths of nylon fishing line and an assortment of curved needles. After Skydark, most of the hospitals had been destroyed in an orgy of hatred toward all tech. But such simple tools as these had been missed completely in the pre-dark shops that made furniture. Designed for working on fabric, the steel needles were overly large, but the tips were still sharp, and they made neat rows that would keep even the worst of wounds tightly closed. He offered the woman a piece of used leather.
This is going to hurt.
Then work quickly.
Sandra slid the piece of leather between her teeth and bit down hard.
Here we go.
After a moment, Brian stepped inside the tent. The kneeling Carter was stitching the wound in Sandra Treggert's thigh. Sandra shook slightly every time the needle went in, the reaction making her breast sway. As Brian went closer, he noticed Carter glancing under the blanket covering the woman's lap, and felt himself grow irrationally angry. What could it possibly matter if the eunuch liked to sneak a harmless peek of what he could never have? Brian had done the exact same thing only a short while ago, although there were still bullets in his blaster, and that made all the difference.
Your clothing, my lady.
Brian placed a brazier full of glowing coals near the foot of the bed, and a pile of garments alongside the naked woman. Grabbing a clean shirt, Sandra quickly pulled it on and started closing the buttons.
Talk to me. Was there enough copper tubing to make another still?
I'm sorry, my lady. I rushed to get the things you requested and didn't stop to ask about such things.
I did.
Dipping the bloody upholstery needle into a bowl of shine, Carter started on a new line.
If all goes well, within a week we'll have a second still in operation. In a month, we will start producing enough shine to fill every lantern in the vill.
Excellent news.
Not a drop goes to the vill. I need it all for fuel. Every drop.
My lady?
Shut up, boy. How are the new demons coming along, Carter?
Very well, my lady.
The sec chief tugged the needle through her skin one last time.
Oh! Oh, damn!
Carter quickly tied off the end in a neat bow knot.
When will the first be ready to have an engine installed?
Carter took a warm cloth from the ceramic bowl and wiped the bloody skin clean, his fingertips stroking her flesh for reasons he couldn't readily put to words.
A month, maybe more. The work of bending the wood is very delicate and...
Unacceptable. You have 2 weeks.
I would need more workers.
Then get them!
Sandra rose stiffly.
Ugh.
The leg trembled but supported her full weight.
You have 2 weeks! Fail me, and you shall lose more than just your life.
Taking a pair of pants from the pile on the bed, the woman proceeded to tell them about the Outlanders and Carl.
Dirty little ballless traitor!
Gathering the locked box, Carter shot the young man a look of pure vitriolic hatred and started to reach for his own weapon when a breathless old man burst into the tent. Sandra immediately buckled a gun belt around her waist.
How dare you enter this tent without permission?
My lady! I ran all the way! There are strangers in the vill!
So why tell me?
They have brought gifts for the ruler of Thunderville. Not for your father, my lady, but for you. Gifts for the Sky Baron.
Slowly, Sandra began to check her weapons to make sure all of them were properly loaded and clean.
All right. Take me to them.
Dawn was just starting to break as Lady Tregart marched up the front steps of the blockhouse. Six armed eunuchs walked behind the woman, guns on their hips and long rifles in their hands. Every person on the streets and in the courtyard smiled and waved at Tregart, and tried not to look at her plump, smooth-faced guards. Stopping in front of the great iron-bound front door of the blockhouse, Sandra was pleased to see the Sekhmen on duty had lost their haggard look of starvation. They were both terribly thin, but their eyes were no longer dull, and they stood straight with strength in their bodies.
Door!
The two Sekhmen lost their smiles and hurried to open the thick portal. They stood well aside as Sandra and her entourage strode into the throne room. As the crowd of Vilfolk parted in front of her like wheat to the wind, Sandra scowled darkly.
Now what the nuking hell's going on here?
The throne room was packed full of people, moving around piles of wicker baskets filled with bread, cans of pre-dark food, and entire wheels of gray cheese. There was a table stacked high with barbed arrows and dozens of longbows. A second table was filled with bottles of shine in every color imaginable. Gallons of shine. And nestled in a small wicker basket, one lone bottle of pre-dark liquor, resting on a silk cloth. Sandra lifted the container to marvel at the raised design on the glass.
Incredible.
The label was faded to nothing more than a suggestion, but the seal around the cap was intact. At first, she didn't know what to make of this display of treasure. It was the wealth of an entire vill. Then comprehension came, and she realized it was the wealth of several vills.
So they all paid, eh? I knew flying the angel over neighboring vills would strike terror into their hearts. Terror of me.
Welcome, my daughter. Over here.
Placing the bottle of liquor down, Sandra turned to approach the head of the huge room. Sitting in his throne, her father was in his robes of state, the heavy velvet cloak edged with ratty white fur that had seen much better days. Moved back inside again, the two wooden thrones were side by side on a raised dais. But now the splintery platform was covered with soft rugs of animal skins, and surrounding the elaborately carved chairs were a dozen iron braziers, the red-hot coals sending out waves of heat that drove away the chill. Covering the entire wall behind the thrones was a huge tapestry. Alternating layers of red and white stretched across the fabric, except for the upper left corner, which was a blue box filled with stars. The tapestry was burned in a few small spots, and there were several bullet holes, but its bright colors still seemed to fill the throne room. Some of the wrinklies claimed it was the symbol of what had once been America. To Baron Tregart, it was a priceless heirloom of the old days. Sandra Tregart considered it merely a decoration, and a rather poor one at that. Stopping at the foot of the dais, Sandra gave a small head bob that served her as a bow. Baron Tregart stroked the head of a dog sitting by his side. Another dog lay at the foot of the throne.
It seems that news of your machine has spread to other vills. All of this just arrived from Black Rock and Boarhead as tribute to the authority of Thunderville.
Did it now?
Sandra suddenly noticed a line of people across the room. Dressed in rags and wearing heavy chains, the backs of the men were covered with old scars, and the bellies of the women were sagging folds of loose skin, their fat breasts heavy and distended.
Breeder slaves.
Of course we shall set them free. Thunderville does not condone slavery.
Surreptitiously, Sandra looked sideways at her armed eunuchs, but they didn't seem to find any glaring holes in that declaration. Her mother had been right. Males only heard what they wanted to hear, and ignored everything else, especially the truth.
They also sent us a dozen horses, with saddles. Wealth, my daughter, riches beyond imagination.
Coldly, Sandra scanned the crowd of civvies and somber Sekhmen to find Zane. The Sekh chief was leaning against the granite block wall near the iron door that led to the private apartments of the Baron and Baroness. The big man was unshaven, his hair tousled and unruly, but the gun in his hand gleamed with oil as he slowly rotated the cylinder, checking the black powder load in the weapon as if he were about to go into battle.
Report, Zane.
Everything your father has said is true, my lady. The horses are in good health, and the saddles are all aged leather, not green that will shrink. We even fed some of the bread and cheese to the dogs. No sign of poisons or toxchems yet.
And these?
Sandra swept a hand across the line of chained slaves, shivering on the bare floor.
Useless, Baron. Shit sent to make us feel sorry and set them free. In a month, they'll eat 10 times the tribute that was sent to us and weaken the entire vill. The men can't be trusted to walk the wall. And the women? Well, I'd rather bone the horses.
Yes. We must set them free. You there, guard, remove those chains!
The slaves looked up at that, their faces a mixture of fear and disbelief. Only one male slave took a full second before reacting with a hopeful smile. Sandra noted that and marked the man's position. So that was the game, eh?
Hold!
Sandra raised a hand. The sec man walked toward the slaves, stopped in his tracks, and looked first at Lady Tregart, then the Baron, and then Zane.
You heard, Lady Tregart.
What? You dare to counter my orders?
I am the leader here, daughter, not you. This is my vill.
Then defend it properly.
Sandra pulled out her gun. A male slave's chest exploded in blood. Reeling backward, he slammed into the wall, dragging several other slaves along with him.
What is the meaning of this? Have you gone mad, daughter? What possible harm could this...
Harm? Watch and learn, my Baron.
The crowd grew nervous over the woman's open defiance of her father. Walking to the corpse, Sandra turned it over.
See there!
She ripped the garment off.
Look at his back!
Shuffling closer, Baron Tregard scowled in disbelief, but there was no denying his own sight. The flesh was clean and unmarked, without a sign of scar or welts.
But how?
He was a spy, my lord. Sent by our new friends to learn what he could and then escape to pave the way for an attack.
Attack?
Invasion and enslavement.
Drawing their weapons, the sec men moved closer to the trembling slaves, while the villfolk stepped back, giving them room to move freely.
The other barons would dare? But I gave them my word that... tribute in exchange for their safety.
Honor means nothing to animals, father. Now do you see? Now do you finally understand that there can never be peace with any other vills? We are alone. We stand or fall alone.
The old man lowered his head to his chest, his age-spotted hands tightening on the armrest. For several minutes, nobody in the throne room dared to speak.
I have been a fool. I didn't want to believe that the America of my mother was completely aced.
We can bring it back, father.
Sandra knelt on the steps. The position brought a wave of pain from the fresh stitching in her leg, and she forced herself to give no sign of discomfort.
I can bring it back and give it to you. Let me, father. Let me save our people.
At any cost.
Sandra pulled out a knife and closed a hand around the blade.
Yes, my lord. Any cost.
She pulled the knife free. Blood began to drop from her fist onto the dais.
I swear by the blood of my fathers.
So be it.
Baron Tregart rose stiffly, carefully, as if he were afraid of breaking it. The old man slipped off his purple robe and draped it across the armrest.
I am too old to wage war. I was too old before you were born, daughter.
Unable to speak, Sandra stared at her father. Women were forbidden to rule in this vill. It had ever been thus. Only males of pure blood could sit on the throne.
The vill is yours, my child.
The Baron gestured to the empty chair. Feeling as if she were flying, Sandra slowly walked toward the wooden chair. Not the one for wives, but the chair on the right, reserved exclusively for the Baron. It seemed to loom in front of her as if in a dream.
Quiet, please. Obviously, the first matter is to resolve what to do with the slaves.
The new Baron studied the anxious people, shivering in their dirty rags. There were many options available, but only one choice.
This vill does not keep slaves. Americans do not keep slaves.
The faces of the chained people brightened at that, hope flickering in their weary eyes.
Oh, have mercy on you.
But, my daughter, we cannot let them go. If one was a spy, there may be others.
Yes, I know, dear father. Zane?
The big sick man stepped forward. He snapped a crisp salute.
Yes, Baron Traggart.
Kill them all.
No!
But make it as quick and painless as possible.
Please, for the love of America, don't kill us!
It shall be done, my lady.
Yes. And, save the chains. We may need them again.
As the sec men pulled out iron cudgels and advanced upon the cringing slaves, Hugh Traggart turned his back on the sight.
With your permission, Baron, I shall go and see your mother now. And afterward, I shall stay out of your way as much as possible.
No, I will always want you in the throne room. When I am flying, there must be a Traggart here to rule.
But that isn't the old way, Baron.
But it is my way, Father. As the Baron, I so command.
And I obey, my daughter.
The former Baron shuffled across the dais. A sec man opened the iron door for the deposed leader, and then locked it tightly behind him.
Done and done.
Sec Chief Zane, come here.
My lady.
That was just for the Vilfolk and my father. I need those slaves alive, so send them directly to my airfield.
It will be done.
Sandra watched him closely for any sign of disobedience, but saw none.
And if your men wish to use the female slaves once or twice before delivering them to me, I have no objections.
By the blood of my fathers, you're stone cold. The men probably would have done it anyway, but now that bride comes as a gift from the throne and buys their loyalty. You know them well.
And is their loyalty for sale?
Not anymore. By God, our Vill will flourish under you. I look forward to serving you for many years, Baron Traggart.
Dismissing the sect chief with a gesture, Sandra settled back into the throne and watched as Zane joined his men. The slaves were forced to carry the dead spy in their arms as the sect men drove them out of the throne room. As they departed, the civvies began heading off to start their morning chores. Even as some died, life went on for the rest.
Like sheep being culled. They're all mindless sheep. Oh yes, you and your men will all serve me well for many years to come.
Sandra Traggart pulled a sharp knife from her belt and tested the edge of the blade with a thumb.
After I have made a few alterations, that is.
Sliding a brass key into the heavy padlock, Hugh Traggart undid the lock on the hallway door. He walked into the dim bedroom. Thick velvet tapestries covered the walls, and an oil lantern burned on top of a heavy oak table. In the flickering yellow light, the former Baron could see the still form lying under the covers of the four-poster. Locking the door behind him, Traggart walked across the dim room and gazed down upon his wife. The fever had taken her mind away 10 years ago, and now she slept, unable to wake. A servant fed her broth and cleaned the sheets, but Traggart no longer pretended that Hannah was still alive. This was merely her shell, breathing, eating, but empty as a spent brass cartridge. Her once lovely face was lined and creased with the passage of time, her skin dabbled with age spots. Only her long hair was still coppery red, the thick filaments almost seeming to move, as if they were alive. His heart skipped a beat at the memory of when he had first seen Hannah, bathing in a pool of clean rainwater behind the Vill Tavern. Hugh had just turned a man that year, but she had clearly been a woman for much longer. He'd remained silent as Hannah stood to dry herself with a patched towel. Then she slowly turned to smile at him, neither condemning nor enticing, before wrapping the towel around her body and padding away on bare feet. Hugh had sought out her father, the Vill blacksmith, that very day, and they were married by the next moon. For 30 long years they ruled the Vill side by side, fighting muties and cold hearts, until that terrible night when a howler got past the gate. Hugh had been hacking at the thing while trying not to look directly at it, when Hannah had come out of nowhere and smashed a lantern at the feet of the thing. The howler went insane as the burning oil set its body on fire, and Hugh had rushed forward to hack the mutie in two. That was when the dogs had converged and torn the howler apart. The dogs all died the next day, but they had helped save the Ville, and he swore to never let one of them die again. The famine had almost made him break that vow.
I really had no choice, dearest. Our daughter has gone insane. She wants to declare war on the world. If I stand in her way, she would have us both aced in our sleep. Blame it on a spy, or a cold heart, or trip me down the stairs. Oh, gods, if only Edmund had lived.
His wife seemed to stir at those words, a breeze moving her hair around her face like mist on a mountain. Hugh could never get over that effect. It was one of the strangest things he had ever seen.
Well, now her fondest wish has come true, and Sandra is the Baron.
He brushed a lock of hair off the woman's wizened face. It seemed to cling to his fingers before settling back into place.
Which means I am no longer a threat. I can kill her now. She won't expect such a thing from me. Old and feeble.
Releasing his wife's hand, the old man shuffled to an armoire and opened the doors. Clean clothes hung from a wooden pole. Moving them aside revealed a shelf at the rear of the cabinet. Lying on a piece of oily cloth was a brace of blasters and a pair of binocs. Taking the blaster on the left, Hugh dropped the clip to inspect the four fat brass rounds inside. They were enormous 50 caliber cartridges, the soft lead tips cut into a crisscross pattern, turning them into deadly hellflowers. The bullets went into a person like a finger, but came out the back, spread larger than a fist. Even a sticky dropped from being hit with a hellflower. Dum-dums, his grandfather had called them, but that word had a new meaning these days.
Hellflower is much more accurate. When these rounds flower, you go straight to hell.
He lifted the binoculars and turned to glance at his wife.
Forgive me, darling.
Hugh tucked the binoculars inside his clothing.
We gave her life. Now I must take it back for the good of the Ville.
Turning toward the door, the old man never saw the woman on the bed struggle to raise a feeble hand in warning, then collapse from the tremendous strain of the effort. Hannah Tregart was left alone. Nobody remained to see the single tear roll down her cheek. Watching from the shadows of an outcropping, Ryan was grudgingly forced to agree. It looked hopeless. The walls of the crater were impassable, the one entrance heavily guarded, and there was only flat, empty ground for a good mile around the ridged crater. There was no way to get close without being seen.
Any underground caverns, tunnels, pre-dark sewer pipes?
No, Ryan. The ground is hard rock. My grandmother said it used to glow at night when she was a little girl, but that went away many snows ago.
A blast pit formed by a nuke?
Instantly, both Ryan and JB checked the rad counters on their shirt collars. The two men relaxed slightly as they saw the counters were silent. If the crater had once been hot, that was long gone.
Look there, at the gate. We've seen those things before. Arbalists, I think Mildred called them.
Yes, Christy. Giant crossbows. This Lady Tregart's no fool. She has the place designed to fight an aerial attack, probably in case somebody stole one of her planes and came back to settle the score. Those things have a greater range than a hand blaster and would punch straight through anything we could get into the air.
Pretty much seriously ace a wag, too.
JB took half of a cigar out of a pocket and tucked it into the corner of his mouth. Setting the tobacco between his back teeth, JB inhaled around the cigar, relishing its rich, dark aroma. He longed to light the battered stogie, but Mildred would have come down on him like ugly on an ape. Ryan rested a boot on a lump of broken concrete. There were some remnants of pre-dark ruins mixed with the lava and tumbled boulders. But he had seen this before. The Earth had rebelled at Skydark and unleashed 1,000 volcanoes across the continent. Sometimes, when Ryan considered the level of destruction, he was surprised that anybody had survived the nuclear shitstorm that had scorched the planet.
How long before your Baron could get another angel made?
A moon, maybe less.
Fire blast.
And she's making several. Our stickies are juicy, and there's a lot of the ancient cloth she calls silk.
Juicy?
For glue.
Ah, clever.
Placing both hands on top of his ebony stick, Doc leaned forward and squinted at the distant front gate of the blast crater.
It truly seems that our esteemed Sky Baron has established a perimeter defense of formidable proportions.
Do you still think your plan will work, Ryan?
If you've got a better idea, Mildred, I'm ready to listen. Trader always said if you're ever absolutely sure about something, what that really means is you don't know shit.
On that, we agree.
Mildred glanced at the BMW motorcycle parked nearby. It was a chancy scheme, foolhardy, really. But if it worked...
There's company coming.
There were some specks on the desert floor moving toward the gate in the crater wall. Several men on horses were herding a line of people who moved with the classic shuffle of chained slaves, heads bent and shoulders hunched. On top of the gate, the sec men were cupping hands to their mouths as they shouted down orders, and the sec man with a long gun started pulling the rope of a bell, the sheer distance neutralizing the ringing. As the gate opened, the men on horseback forced the people in chains through the tiny door. The riders followed, each squeezing through individually, and then the opening in the gate was closed. Jack scowled.
Slaves.
But where did all of these come from? Thunderville does not use slaves. And all of those horses.
I don't know. Tribute from Othervilles? Ransom paid to keep Lady Treggert from skybombing them?
So she's already taken over Vills. Dark night, she moves fast.
We can always leave.
Mildred cast a look in the direction of the redoubt. A single jump in the Matrans, and the companions could be 1,000 miles away. More. Maybe this Treggert would be happy with only a couple of Vills under her heel. But if not, unchecked, this woman would soon have an empire. Piloted by her eunuchs, soon more and more biplanes would fill the skies. Bombs falling from stars to finish the job that the nuke war had started. The physician hung her head. The world was too savage, civilization too delicate right now for this new type of warfare. There was only one thing to do. Stop the Baron now. Destroy the planes and burn her journals. Erase all knowledge of the Angel until it was no more than another Deathlands myth, like the traitor.
Any idea who Treggert might have squeezed for the jack, Carl?
No, I can't. This is too much. I cannot betray my mistress any further. I just can't.
Carl stared at the black Hummer, as if it were filled with hooting stickies.
Doesn't matter. The sun is about to set. It's time to start.
Yeah, I guess so. Come on, get in, Carl.
As Carl reached down to unbuckle his gun belt and give it back to the others, Ryan stepped alongside him, the bulbous silencer of the Sig Sauer, digging into the man's neck.
I was hoping to do this the easy way.
Ryan took Carl's gun with his free hand.
We need you in that wag, Carl, but we don't need you breathing.
For a moment, it almost seemed as if Carl were going to challenge that ultimatum. Then he slumped and got listlessly into the front seat of the Hummer. Ryan kept a careful watch on the man as Christie buckled the seatbelt good and tight. Jack pulled some twine from the pocket of his leather jacket.
Tie his hands?
No, Jack. That shouldn't be necessary.
Thank you, Mildred.
Lash his throat to the headrest.
What?
Come on, Ryan.
No, you come on, Mildred. If he wants to jump out the door after that, he'll only choke himself.
As the work was done, Carl stared at the Deathlands warrior with open hatred.
So, you're just another outlander. I thought you were my friend.
You thought wrong, pal. Look, Carl, you're either with us or against us. Only the dead are neutral. You just made your choice.
Carl gave no reply, knowing that they would never understand. Jack climbed into the rear seat. He double-checked the knots and pulled out a blade. He rested a pale hand on the eunuch's shoulder.
Just in case.
Ignoring the threatening blade, Carl closed his eyes and leaned backward in the seat.
I'm so sorry, Carl.
That's okay, Mildred.
Okay. Everybody get Razor. When they come back, all hell is gonna break loose.
More for you than us, lover. Last chance to change your mind.
Let's go, Ryan.
Ryan headed for the beamer. The sun was low behind the orange clouds on the horizon as Sandra Treggert rode her horse along a street of the Ville. Incredibly, there was still a smell of mule soup in the air, and the Ville folk all respectfully bowed as the woman passed.
Ah,
there's our lovely new Baron.
Wisely, Sandra knew that response was partially for her family name and partially for the six-armed Sekhmen that rode just behind. Her eunuchs were known for having little patience with anybody that behaved badly toward their mistress. Nearing the Vill gate, the woman was pleased to see the old guards had been replaced. The new Sekhmen were younger and skeletally lean from the famine, but the brown heels of bread stuck out of their pockets, and the guards smartly saluted at her approach.
At last. Everything is under control. The Vill is mine. Nothing can stop me now.
As the guards pushed open the gate, she rode through. But then Sandra quickly reined in her horse and placed a hand on the long gun slung over the pommel. There was a figure racing toward the Vill at breakneck speed. A Sekhman walked his mount alongside her own stallion.
My lady, why did you stop? Is everything all right?
Then he saw the oncoming runner and immediately pulled his blaster.
Should we sound the alarm?
Not yet.
Sandra released the long gun. The sprinting man was only Carter. There was no sign of blood on the man, but his face was a mask of fear.
Mistress, stop. Get back inside.
Why?
Sandra craned her neck to see if anybody was following. The desert was clear to the Ojai and the low foothills beyond. But the setting sun was causing the mesas to throw long shadows across the landscape, a dark purple swatch that could be hiding anything.
There was a war wag that came out of the desert. It stopped to study the gate. We shot at the driver with the big crossbows, but missed. Then it roared off into the foothills, over there.
Shifting in her saddle, Sandra scowled in the direction the man pointed. Who would dare to wreck the crater? Perhaps the Baron who sent the spies disguised as slaves? Was this a two-side attack? Then she saw the hesitation in the eunuch's face, and knew there was more.
Tell me the rest.
Well, I...
Out with it, man!
Carl was in the wag.
Stinking traitor! That yellow belly has probably told them everything about our defenses. Carter, what color was the wag?
Why, black, my lady. Is that important?
Yes, very important. They're back. The cold hearts from the riverbed.
Without thinking, Sandra rubbed the stiff wound in her bandaged thigh. Somebody in the black war wag had nearly killed her yesterday with a long gun. Maybe she could return the favor this day. Looking at the sky, Sandra frowned. Black dust. This was some sort of a trick. There was no way in hell that black wag randomly decided to appear at this part of the day, when it was just light enough for them to see, and only minutes before it was too dark for her to fly. She felt a rush of cold adrenaline flow into her stomach.
They're planning an attack. You there! Guard!
Sandra turned in the saddle.
Front and center!
A Sekhman left his post at the gate and rushed over.
Yes, Baron?
Find Zane! Have him get the Vill ready for an attack. Nobody is to enter or leave without my permission, understood?
Yes, Baron!
She glanced over her shoulder.
And have him send out a wag to check the foothills. 5 men, 20 rounds each!
20?
That is what I said! Now get moving, boy! This is why you became a Sekhman. Defend the Vill!
The Sekhman streaked through the open gate and raced around the corner, heading toward the barracks.
You heard the Baron! Find Zane! Now!
That takes care of the Vill. Now the airfield.
What should we do, my lady?
Stay close to me. There may be snipers. Carter, is the Angel ready to fly?
The man jogged alongside to keep up with his lady's mount.
Yes, my lady. But mistress, soon it will be night.
And Carl knows that I don't fly at night. But this time I will. And I'll blow that black war wag straight to hell.
Mistress, no!
Carter grabbed the reins, trying to slow the stallion.
The danger is too great.
Coward!
Sandra jerked free.
When I cut your balls off, did I also cut out your heart?
Shocked beyond words, Carter stepped backward at that, his face contorting into a feral mask of rage. The expression swiftly faded, but Sandra could see she had gone too far, and the man's open rebellion lay dangerously close to the surface.
Carter, you stay here and help defend the Vill.
She dug both heels into the horse. As the other mounted Sekhman started after their baron, Carter was suddenly left alone in a cloud of dust.
But, my lady!
He slowly turned and started walking toward the Vill, his own emotions a churning storm of indecision. The stars were just beginning to appear in the evening sky as the war wag rolled out of the Vill and across the desert plain. Following the bank of the river, the armored station wagon swept past the airfield, the guard on the gate watching their progress closely.
Damn! Damn, muties! I just hate the bastards, Zane!
Oh, stuff it, Davis. They're norms. They're just snipped is all.
Oh, make some muties to me!
Moving inland, the headlights washed over the rocky foothills far ahead of the vehicle. In the harsh illumination, the Sekhmen could see a big wag parked under an escarpment, with several dark shapes sprawled on the ground nearby. Guns lay strewn around everywhere, and smoke curled from inside the vehicle.
Looks like they've been jacked. Stay sharp. Look for any survivors. We may have two groups out here, and the Baron will want some alive for questioning.
We'll just tenderize him a bit first, Chief.
Keep your pants on, Eagleson.
Eagleson went back to checking the cylinder on his hand cannon. With the new shipment of tribute from the other Vills, the guards all had extra ammo. It was unbelievable. They all still carried crossbows, but those were just for cheapjacks, muties and such, not important enough to waste a cartridge on. Along with the other tribute, Davis had gotten a pair of homemade boots, and Zane was wearing a pre-dark gun belt with enough loops around his waist to hold all the ammo in the world. And all because the new Baron Treggert had flown over the other Vill with her air wag. Reaching into a pocket of his shirt, Eagleson pulled out a piece of jerky and ripped off a bite, then offered it around. Most of the other Sekhmen took a chaw. Extra food, extra ammo, boots, slaves. If her father hadn't stepped down from the Vill throne, the Sekhmen would have taken over the Vill to give it to her as a gift. Fuck peace. They were strong again. Eagleson and the others were itching for some way to show their loyalty to the lady. And stopping some outlanders who got too close to her private crater would do just fine. Davis slowed the wag to a stop, just outside the range of an arrow from the smoking wag.
I don't like this.
Zane peered carefully at the scene. All four of the doors were wide open on the wag, and there was nobody inside. Then he noticed the smoke wasn't coming from under the hood, but from something on the ground, partially hidden by a large rock.
What the hell's that, Rusty Kim? Nuking hell, it's a trap!
Zane ducked low, throwing open the door. Davis rocked back with blood on his face.
Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!
Diving out of the wag, Zane hit the dirt and rolled away from the vehicle to come up firing his long gun blindly. The rest of his Sekhmen were only a split second behind their chief. Eagleson fanned the knife with his handgun. Blood suddenly erupted from Eagleson's throat, spraying outward in an arc to wash across a couple of other Sekhmen. As they turned, the dying man fell to his knees, his blaster triggering from the impact into the ground. Almost instantly, there came two flashes of fire from the darkness above, and a Sekhmen reeled backward with most of his face removed.
They're on top of the rock!
Zane raced behind the wag. Crouching low, the Sek Chief feverishly worked the bolt to load a fresh ammo clip.
Come on, Zane, you stupid bastard!
Just then, something landed and rolled beneath the station wagon.
What the hell was that?
Zane tried to get a look under the vehicle. As the writhing fireball rose upward, the companions on top of the rocky ledge hastily pulled back to safety.
Move fast! We gotta get those crossbows out of the fire. We're gonna need them. The next part's tricky.
Ryan scrambled down to the desert floor again. Climbing into the Angel, Sandra Treggert looked to the west. Something fiery was rising like an atomic dawn above the jagged lava peaks. The writhing column hovered in the air for a moment, then faded away. Brian looked away from the front of the biplane. Both of his hands were on the propeller, poised to give it a starting shove.
That was an explosion!
Yes, but who aced whom is the question.
Treggert slipped into the cockpit. Brian removed his hands from the propeller.
I could check, my lady.
Don't bother. I'll know soon enough.
She set the choke and throttle. The wind was kicking up again, and her bandaged leg was throbbing like a canny drum. Not a good night to fly. But there wasn't a sign of the toxic chem clouds overhead. Visibility would be exceptional.
Good hunting weather.
There had been a lot of that lately. According to her father, it seemed to take longer and longer for the death clouds to return from the days when he was a small boy. Maybe the world was finally healing itself from the after effects of the nuke war. The world was taking back the sky. And so was she. Checking the box at her side, Sandra counted a full complement of 12 sky bombs, 6 Molotovs and 6 pipe bombs, the stubby fuses jutting and ready to go. If she missed with one, the shrapnel in the other would do the job. Standing near the biplane, a husky Sekhman named Renee held in his hands the rope attached to the chocks.
Is this flight wise, mistress? Even with the moonlight, it will be too dangerous for you to land in the desert. The ground is too soft. You'll never get airborne again.
Since when did you suddenly know so much about flying, Renee?
But I was just...
I'll be all right, Renee.
Yes, Baron Treggert.
There are a few flat-top mesas that I can use in case of emergency.
Sandra slid on her sunglasses. Then, irritably, she yanked them off.
Damn!
Her vision would either be blurred from the wind, or everything would be tinted too dark to see.
What, Baron?
It's nothing.
If you say so, mistress.
Renee's hands were worrying the thick rope. Sandra checked her hidden derringers.
Just keep the new slaves sewing. I want those demons ready to go in 10 days!
10?
His jaw dropping, Renee started to speak, but stopped. He licked his lips in the effort to try to frame the question.
Brian, you will receive a plane. With Carl aced, you and Carter shall be the first of my new breed of Sekhmen. Wingmen!
Damn. To fly.
Renee's eyes took on a dreamy quality.
Check the feed!
Renee snapped to attention and went to the rapid fire attached to the front of the biplane. He examined the belt of ammo. Even when the others got skywags, she knew that only the Angel would carry a rapid fire. There were two more in the supply tent, but she carried the firing pins to the lightweight blasters in a pouch on her gun belt. Ammo was scarce, so every round was reserved for her. Her legs started to throb again, and Sandra rubbed it through the bandage and loose pants. Those cold hearts in the black wag had fired at her as if ammo grew on trees, so she had wisely taken some additional precautions for this flight. Wooden slats now lined the sides and bottom of the cockpit to serve as crude armor. To offset the additional weight, Sandra had ordered the rear seat removed, which would make the biplane light in the rear and more difficult to do fast turns, but she felt it was more than worth the sacrifice. Once airborne, Sandra would be invulnerable, unstoppable.
Everything is ready, mistress.
Renee stepped clear of the wings. The Baron nodded and fed the engine some fuel.
Contact!
Contact!
Baron! Wait! Baron!
One of the servants from the blockhouse rushed toward the machine, then stopped in obvious fear. The Norm was holding a heavy object wrapped in fine silk.
What is that? Fuck Whitmore Trib from another Baron?
It is a gift from your father.
The servant sidled closer.
The damn gift!
Sandra set the brake and leaned over the side for a better view. Nodding agreement, the servant lovingly unfolded the thin silk to reveal a squat pair of pre-dark long eyes, the kind called binocs.
Excellent, mistress. Those will be a great help on your flight.
Going still, Sandra kept her face expressionless. The binocs would be a tremendous help. However, as a child, she had explored every inch of the ville, including her parents' bedroom and private cabinet. The lock had proved impossible to pick, but cuddling with her mother, Treggert had stolen the key and gotten inside anyway. There had been a lot of blasters inside, along with a pair of binocs. Maybe that exact pair. They certainly looked the same. Her eyes narrowed. The binocs in the cabinet had been useless. The glass at both ends had still been intact, but there was something broken inside. She remembered that the view had been distorted and blurred. Those binocs were utterly useless. And there certainly wasn't another pair in the bill. Now why would her loving father send her a pair of worthless binoculars?
Yes, a magnificent gift. But I can't see the peaks with these spinning propellers in the way. Would you check the rim of the crater for me?
Me? Yes, at once, Baron.
Rushing away from the shaking biplane, the servant raised the binocs and pressed them to his face. He frowned.
Baron, I must be doing something wrong because I can't see anything through these... Oh!
He suddenly started to shake all over and lowered the heavy binocs. Steel shafts jutted from both of his eyes, blood mixing with a clear ichor to trickle like crimson tears down his cheeks. The servant turned to her his mouth moving in gibberish. He settled to the ground, still holding the deadly Binox, as death arrived.
Black dust!
Brian drew his blaster, looking around the airfield. Renee almost dropped the rope in shock.
A booby trap? You were sent a booby trap by your own father, the Baron?
He may be my father, but he is no longer my Baron, remember? The old fool gave me the throne!
But still!
The storm's coming, my lady!
Slowly, Sandra turned to face Brian. He still had the gun in his grip and was looking for anything coming this way. The decision to use him was made in a heartbeat.
Brian!
Brian turned and saluted.
Yes, Baron!
Go back to the mill and give my father the news of my death. And be sure to cry a lot. And then when they are not looking, chill him.
The Baron?
The former Baron. I rule now.
Stupefied, he gazed at the gun in his hands, as if he had never seen one before. Then he gently tucked the weapon into the holster at his side. As Brian lifted his head to look at the woman, she could see a new heart light in his eyes. She knew in that moment that he was no longer destined to join the ranks of her eunuchs, but to become the sect chief of Thunderville.
It shall be done, my lady!
Then get moving, Captain Brian Stone!
Swelling with pride, he crisply saluted. He turned to run for the gate on the far side of the airfield with a new determined purpose.
Chucks!
Sandra released the brake again.
Chucks!
Renee yanked on the rope. As the wooden wedges came free, the angel started forward with a lurch, rapidly building speed and power until it was fairly skimming along the smooth rock floor of the ancient crater. She thrilled to the almost sexual build of tension as she clicked off the safety on the big pre-dark rapid fire. Yes. First a little fun before she took care of Ville business. She was going to enjoy this. The biplane rose over the rim of the blast crater and moved about in a sweeping arc through the starry sky, before slowly angling toward the foothills. Ryan watched from atop the BMW motorcycle.
Here she comes.
Undoing his gun belt, Ryan passed the 6-hour to Mildred.
Move fast, lover.
That's the plan, babe.
Ryan checked the Steyr SSG-70. The bolt action was hanging in front of him, and he worked the bolt to chamber around. Christy and Mildred quickly rejoined the rest of the companions in the Black Hummer, safely out of view in front of the rocky escarpment. Only a few yards away, the smashed wag was still burning, the dancing flames making the rocks and corpses appear to move with nightmarish life. Staying high, the sky wag swept past the combat zone, then circled around to come in lower. Shifting his combat boots on the ground, Ryan felt the urge to grab the Steyr to try to kill the psycho right now. But unless she was a total fool, she would have some sort of protection this time. A pre-dark flak jacket or a sheet iron. They weren't even sure that Mildred hit flesh that last time. For all Ryan knew, the triple damn thing was blaster-proof, and stepping into view would only get his head blown off.
Softly, softly, catchy muty. That's what Doc always says, isn't it?
Swooping in from the east, the angel swept past the fiery wreckage of the wag, and for a split second, Ryan saw the profile of the woman in the moonlight.
Here goes nothing.
Ryan shoved back the kickstand and darted forward. The sound of the skywag filled the air, and he knew there was no way the Baron could hear the subdued murmur of the beamer. He clicked on the headlight, the brilliant beam stabbing across the irregular ground of the foothills like a plasma beam. The biplane slipped sideways from the racing motorcycle. As Ryan crested a hillock, the two machines ran parallel to each other for a breathless instant, and the drivers faced each other. Grabbing the Steyr, Ryan awkwardly lifted the rifle and fired sideways at the skywag. The pilot jerked, and suddenly the winged machine was dropping behind.
Did I hit the bitch?
Nope.
Trying to work the bolt again, Ryan found the weapon jammed.
Shit!
The biplane flashed past him and started to circle around for another pass.
Fuck!
Abandoning the effort, Ryan grabbed the handlebars tight as he streaked down the other side of the hillock, now concentrating fully on his driving. Brian Stone swung open the door in the airfield gate. Instantly, there was a blur of motion to his left. He started to turn when the wooden rifle butt cracked into his temple. Several hands grabbed the unconscious sect man and dragged him out of the way as Jack slipped through the door and into the crater. Smoking a cig, A nearby Sekhmet registered shock at the sight of the albino.
Hey, what the hell?
Jack flipped his hand. The man stumbled backward, the handle of a leaf-bladed throwing knife filling his mouth. A wellspring of blood began to gush forth. Then Jack was upon him. A second knife flashed like silver in the light of the alcohol lanterns, and the Sekhmet crumpled to the stony ground. Retrieving his blades from the corpse, Jack turned to see JB and Christy easing through the doorway with crossbows in their hands. Drawing his Colt Python, the teen pointed upward and above them to the left and right. Quickly, the man and woman separated and walked backward into the crater until they could see the two guards standing on top of the gate. One was eating while the other was using a knife to dig a new hole in his gun belt. The latter guard finished and sheathed the blade.
Who's that?
The two Sekhmet turned in surprise at the noise. Grabbing their throats, the guards stumbled backward to go over the gate and out of sight. Mildred slipped in through the opening with the Sig Sauer held tightly in both hands. Torches were set on top of the gate, but none near the bottom, and the area was cast in murky shadows. Thank goodness for the arrogance of new barons, who always seemed to think that their particular vill was impregnable.
Damn fools! The only thing in the world impregnable is a woman who's already pregnant.
Closing the door behind her, Mildred moved stealthily through the darkness, scanning the vast open expanse of the airfield. The layout was pretty much as Carl had said. She soon found her targets and knelt as if at a gun range to take careful aim with her crossbow. At the gate, JB passed his crossbow to Jack, who immediately started reloading the weapon. Christy already had another arrow inserted into her crossbow and was watching the shadows for any movements, her hair a flexing riot of curls around her tense face. She hated doing a night creep, even when there was no other choice. Meanwhile, JB was attaching two of his most powerful pipe bombs to the main timber supporting the wall. He could see Doc struggling from outside as the old man tried to remove as many of the dirt-filled tires as possible. The bodies he left where they landed. JB eased up behind Christy and tapped her twice on the shoulder to let her know that the others were ready. In response, she pulled the trigger once. She quickly inserted another arrow and fired again. 100 yards away, a steaming pipe dented and fermenting mash sprayed out in a boiling stream. The man guarding the pressurized still reacted.
She's about to blow!
The alcohol-rich brew reached the banked fire underneath. Workers started to run as blue flames raced up the stream and entered the metal container. Just then, a pipe on the new still dented and also spurted an alcohol leak. A tongue of flame shot out of the hole in the first punctured pipe just as the second stream caught fire. One eunuch was shoveling wet garbage onto the cook fire, trying to kill the blaze, when the heated container burst apart. Chunks of metal, man, and flaming mash sprayed out in every direction. Then the new larger still exploded with twice the force. A halo of burning debris shotgunning into the sky to rain back upon the eunuchs and tents. Moving fast, the companions spread out across the airfield, keeping safely inside the shadows of the tents not ablaze. As the conflagration spread, they could see dark shapes in the other tents, but they were all a jumbled blur and there was no way to tell what any individual tent contained. Suddenly, the door to a shitter slammed open. A man stepped into the firelight, tugging up his pants.
What the human hell is going on?
Christy shot him from the hip. The man staggered back into the wooden shack, clawing at the arrow sticking through his throat.
Any sign of them? No, Mildred. Yes, over there.
Christy dropped the spent crossbow and pulled out her S&W wheel gun.
The big tent on the end near the horse corral.
There was a rag tied around the barrel of the revolver to hold down any gleam from the polished metal. The time for fancy long-range crossbow killing was done. From here on, all of it would be up close and dirty.
I see him.
Jack launched his last arrow at a man loading a long gun. But the missile hit nothing.
Shit!
As Jack tossed away the crossbow and pulled out his Colt, JB squeezed his Uzi just as the Sekhmet brought up his long gun. The Sekhmet dropped his gun to clutch his belly before toppling over sideways.
That was close.
Too close, Jack.
Mildred fired two rounds at something moving in the shadows. But there was no answering cry of pain.
Damn! The firelight's throwing off my aim!
Jack, you and JB go free the slaves and get them out of here! Got him! Mildred and I will find Traegert's tech journal.
The men moved off into the night. By now, resistance was starting to sound all across the airfield.
Over here! I got one of them!
Shit. The gate.
Doc!
Mildred glanced that way.
Well, that takes care of that.
No mistaking Doc's Lamont. With him covering our back, just watch for the crossfire and we may get out of here still breathing.
That's the plan. The tents!
Stickies. Do you think they got to the women?
God, I hope not.
I just hope those cages are strong enough to hold them.
A secondary explosion came from behind the line of tents. A man dashed into view, dripping flames. Ignoring the human torch, Christy ducked to fan her gun at the silhouette of another man aiming a crossbow their way.
God damn it!
You okay, Christy?
Oh, it's just a scratch.
Christy took out the spent shells to insert live rounds, then almost dropped the weapon as something painfully lanced through her head, going from ear to ear.
Ow! What the frag was that?
Christy looked frantically around. She gingerly touched her ear, half expecting to find blood, but there was no damage that she could find.
What happened, Christy?
Something went through my head like a big nail. I've never felt anything like that before in my life.
Well, I can take a guess.
Mildred pulled out the Czech ZKR target pistol with her left hand. She turned in a fast circle, the two guns sweeping for targets.
That must have been an ultrasonic whistle. Get ready. They'll be here any second.
Who?
Christy suddenly noticed something moving in the darkness of the open airfield. No, she noticed several things.
Dogs!
Time to reload.